رضا الإمام الجواد عليه السلام. And therefore Imam رضا عليه السلام he would say أعظم بركة. My son Jawad is the most blissful child in Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. He has so much barakah, spiritual barakah, mentally, you know, scientifically, and definitely, you know, economically. Like Jawad in all aspects of the life which human being they need. Mm-hmm. So he was Jawad. Why? Because by his existence and wujud in this earth, so many confusion has been solved for people of definitely
you
Shia
mean scientific and definitely. Confusions?
Exactly, scientific about especially imamate and hidayat, you know, the guidance from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, the system, because people were totally confused. We all know, mashallah, our viewers definitely they have very good knowledge about 14 ma'asumeen. So we know, like, so many people, they were waqifiyah. Like, they would say, this, we have seven imam, till seven. Like, we don't need eight one, because of, again, the doubts, you know. And we don't need the ten one or nine one, you know. So the waqifiyah was so much, like, in that sense, they were so much powerful in that time. And not only waqifiyah, so many people, they were mujassima, like they would believe that Allah tabarak wa ta'ala has a physical, like, you know,
being.
Shape and being. And so many firqa and groups and, you know, schools of thoughts were there after seventh imam. So more confusions were there. And not even the Shia, the lovers of Ahlul Bayt, they would say, how it is possible that imam can be imam in the age of six or seven? It's too early. That was big shock for them. And they also had, because of their simplicity and, you know, lack of knowledge, they would say, no, we can't believe it. This is imam. This is and even Imam Rabbah has left him all alone with so many doubts. Yeah,
right.
In the city of Medina, one very young child as an imam, first time in the history of, like, especially, you know, the Khatimun Nabiyyin and the final prophet's time. So,
Sister Radia, I'm going to come back to this question, but we're going to go for a short break, and then we'll be right back. This is Light Upon Light, a special program on the occasion of the birthday anniversary of Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam. Congratulations to all of you. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the continuation of our discussion.
Born in Holy Medina on 10th of Rajab, 195 after Hijra, Imam Jawad was the holy son of Imam Rizal. His name was Muhammad, and he was called Jawad, meaning generous. Imam Rizā used to say time and again that Imam Jawad was the most auspicious and blissful child born for the Shia Muslims. Three messengers received their missions in their childhood, and similarly, three imams were given imamate at their childhood. First of whom was Imam Jawad, who succeeded his father Imam Rizā at the age of 8. With an 8-year-old boy at the helm of the Shia Muslim world, there was an outbreak of misgivings and doubts among the Shias. However, all these doubts turned into solid faith when the elders and Shia scholars testified to the exceptional knowledge of the young Imam Jawad. Following the martyrdom of Imam Rizā, Ma'mun lost his social status among the public, an incident which forced Ma'mun to leave Khorasan and settle in Baghdad. Like in the past, Ma'mun forced Imam Jawad to come to Baghdad and marry his daughter as a show of his intimacy and amity towards the household of the Islamic prophet. Like his father, Imam Jawad inherited the knowledge of his noble forefathers and the Islamic messenger. At his young age, Imam Jawad participated in many debates, which were usually held at the presence of Ma'mun. In these debates, the expansive knowledge of Imam Jawad left his opponents with nothing but admiration and humility. As one of his major works, Imam Jawad managed to walk the Shia Muslims safely through the useless but widespread philosophical discussions of that era. Most of these discussions rooted in the massive works of translations from Greek philosophy, which had already left a big influence on the non-Shia schools of thought. The approach of Imam Jawad, however, was always illustrative, as His Holiness openly refuted these baseless thoughts and stopped the Shia Muslims from engaging into such impractical debates. The management of the wide network of deputies among Shia Muslims, which was formally established by Imam Kazim, was also another great work by Imam Jawad. In fact, the Shia Muslims needed to be prepared for a new era, dubbed as the occultation era, when the Shias won't be able to meet the holy infallible Imams in person. On the surface, Ma'mun offered her daughter's hand to Imam Jawad in marriage. However, he always held ill intentions towards this holy Imam. Ma'mun tried to put his evil plans into practice and kill Imam Jawad, But the only Imam survived this malicious attempt by the wills of God. Eventually, Ma'mun was succeeded by Mu'tasim, another brutal Abbasid ruler who poisoned Imam Jawad in 220 after Hijrah, in a plan carried out by the daughter of the deceased Ma'mun, who was also married to Imam Jawad. At the age of 25, Imam Jawad was martyred and his pure body was left on the roof for 3 days. Later on, when the people learned about the martyrdom of Imam Jawad, they buried this holy Imam near his grandfather, Imam Kazim, in Kazimiyyah.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. This is Light Upon Light, a special program on the occasion of the birthday anniversary of Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam. So this is actually one of my questions as well, what we were talking about before the break. You said that a lot of the followers of Imam Ridha alayhi salam had the doubt, first of all, that where is the child, the successor of the Imam, and second of all, that Imam Ridha had to leave Imam Jawad when he was only 3 years old, right? So we are talking about a time when there's a lot of ideological confusion among the followers and the Shias. So how does a three-year-old child really grow to be like ready for this role of imamate and the scientific role that he had to play, you know, like clearing all the doubts and
that is again one of the meaning of Jawad. You know, Imam Ridha alayhi salam, during his time in Medina, even after the birth of Imam Jawad alayhi salam, this was one of his duty to introduce his son. And literally he would say, my son Jawad is like Musa. You know, Musa, Hazrat Musa, like, and my son is like a Jesus, Hazrat Isa. Like he is full of, he has so many miracles in his life. And he literally would do. And this is the help and, you know, like guidance from Allah Ta'ala. Whenever we as a human being and Anbiya alayhi salam and A'imma alayhi salam, they don't have like maybe support from people, they can't digest that this youngest person, how can be, you know, as a guide and imam for us. So Allah will give them the power of some miracles. So Imam's stick would talk sometimes, Imam Jawad alayhi salam. Like one day, one of the very, very outstanding debater and faqih and expert, he would live in Samarra, I think something Aktam his name is. So he literally said, I have a doubt on your imama, to Imam Jawad alayhi salam. And the asa, the stick of Imam Jawad, start talking. And literally the asa said, you know, this is my imam of my time, Imam Zaman. And then he got astonished. So sometimes a guy came and he said, you know, I have a pain in my eyes. And Imam Ridha was in the city of Medina in that time. And maybe Imam Jawad was only two. And that time, what Imam Jawad he used to say, don't refer to me, go to my son. You know, the imam, the next imam. So, and then Imam Jawad would give cure to blind, you know, as like literally this was something very like common for Imam Ridha and for the close companion of Imam Ridha alayhi salam and Imam Jawad, that this is the, you know, exactly the imam is the position of imam. And one more like story we have, that once a guy, when he came, he was very in suffering from economically, like in his life. So what Imam did, Imam just went to the place where he would pray. Mihrab has such a, you know, like powerful effects in our life. So inshallah, we all would have some mihrab. Mihrab means the prayer area in our in like houses, inshallah. So Imam went to the mihrab of his things, you know, not the extra things, whatever, they don't need it. So one is that, and the second is that, you know, the hadith which I have shared with you, as-sakha aw shajaratun fil jannah, this is by Rasulullah, but the narrator is Bibi Fatima Zahra salamu alayhi alayha. So I just love it, you know, like we know that not only Jawadul A'imma, you know, this tree of generosity has come from Khatijatul Kubra too, you know, right. How generous she was. Yeah. So when we talk about them and connect with them, then automatically we love to give, love to share. And even that some you know, unfortunately some games we have, like musical chair. So we are not like taught by since childhood. In musical chair, the last stage is that, you know, two people are there and one chair.
Yeah.
So what this game is teaching us that, you know, we have to push the other participant and we have to grab ourselves that chair. This is not a sharing, you know, habit. So the game should be like that we have to teach the children since childhood that, you know, you have to share the same chair. That is the winner. Mm-hmm. You know, sharing, caring, loving, not only generosity in just material stuff.
Right.
Even you know, the way we talk, the way we think, you know, we can be generous, inshallah.
Thank you so much. Thank you for following us until now. This was Light Upon Light, a special program brought to you on the occasion of the auspicious birthday anniversary of Imam Jawad alayhi salam. I hope that inshallah we can at least today sort of express that sense of generosity more in our life. Until another program, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Around the world with reporters.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip held a press conference aimed at expressing their refusal of the recent normalization of ties with the Israeli regime. The conference comes as a code of ethics for Palestinian journalists and media institutes to stress the rejection for normalizing ties with Israel.
We condemn the recent normalization of ties with Israel. We held this conference as a code of ethics for journalists and media institutes to reveal the Israeli violations and normalization of ties with the Israeli regime. The normalization of ties remains a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
A number of Palestinian leaders, activists, and journalists attended the conference and condemned establishing Israeli relations, stressing that no deal can bring peace to Israel in the West Asia. Palestinian journalists and activists added that media has a significant role in conveying the true image of the inhumane Israeli regime and refused any normalization of ties with Israel in terms of media.
Normalizing ties with Israel is a way to justify the inhumane nature of Israel. The recent normalization of ties with Israel is a betrayal of the Palestinian cause, and we won't accept any recognition of Israel at the expense of Palestinians.
Palestinians call on Arab and Muslim nations to end these normalization of ties with Israel that aims to demolish the historical Palestinian cause.
Palestinian activists are all united to say that normalization of ties with Israel is a betrayal of all Palestinians. Media should stand against these attempts to demolish the Palestinian cause. All Arabs and Muslims should stop recognizing Israel as a state.
So far, a number of Arab states have normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. The move has sparked harsh criticism among the Muslim nations.
Palestinians here stress they strongly refuse to recognize Israel and reject the normalization of ties with the Tel Aviv regime by certain countries. They say the resistance is ongoing and no deal can bring peace to Israel at the expense of Palestinians. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
The average student in the United States today leaves college with $37,000 of debt from student loans. University tuition has risen 1,200% since the late 1970s. Those younger than 24, called Generation Z, face the same prospect of expensive higher education combined with national economic stagnation since 2008. While on the campaign trail, Democrats raised major hopes with talk of an executive order canceling up to $50,000 in student debt. But President Joe Biden just declared, quote, "I will not make that happen," and he will only consider $10,000 in debt relief.
Student debt is parasitic. It's very right-wing. Joe Biden isn't centrist. He's right wing. He's always been right wing. If this person said that he had the capability to do it, which he does, and he said he does, and he's not going to do it because it sets the wrong precedent, then you're going to have a bunch of angry people.
Such huge amounts of debt has forced the millennial class to often delay mature steps, like buying a house, investing, pursuing a graduate degree, marriage, and children. That all depresses the economy, creates more social instability and disharmony, and all the while, economic inequality skyrockets in favor of the moneylenders.
I have $28,000 in student debt. Under capitalism, like, college can be a very predatory thing. You're betting the rest of your life to, like, being able to make these payments. And this is going to create more distrust for the Democrats. This is going to embolden more people that might be Republican that also have a lot of student debt to not trust this person.
The student debt crisis is seemingly a uniquely American issue, but 45 million Americans owe almost $2 trillion in student debt. The immense scope of the problem seems to ensure that the nation's young adults will keep this issue in the limelight for years, or maybe even decades, until either debt relief is granted or wages massively rise. Rami Mazahari, Chicago.
The scramble for vaccines has exposed global inequality yet again. Rich economies, including the US, EU, and the UK, have collectively secured more than double the amount they need, 3 billion doses, and administered 75% of the vaccines actually in existence. But in dozens of countries, no one has been vaccinated.
We are more than a little bit concerned that there is or is to be hoarding and price gouging, as well as undue preference in some quarters. This being so, we at CARICOM have recently called upon WHO to immediately convene an international convention of the world's people's representatives to commiserate, explain, assist, and commit to a fair sharing of the available vaccine resources for the benefit of all humankind and not just the privileged, well-heeled few.
Accused of hoarding, world leaders at the G7 summit Friday tried to stave off criticism by making more pledges. The UK has boasted about leading the world out of the pandemic, but Boris Johnson says the UK comes first, and spare doses will only be given away once all British adults have got the jab. The projection for that is July. US President Joe Biden also used the G7 summit, his first international meeting, to redeem Washington's reputation as the largest contributor to organizations like the World Health Organization. Geopolitics is at play here. Russia and China have emerged as major vaccine suppliers, but the EU has been accused of failing to execute a fair and even rollout, forcing nations to look elsewhere for supplies. China and Russia have already shipped tens of thousands of doses of their COVID-19 vaccine to developing and underdeveloped countries as well. Meanwhile, the US has stopped short of donating from its own massive supply. Amnesty International says rich countries do themselves no favors by hoarding. In the end, if not enough people are immunized, the virus will have free range to mutate and outsmart the vaccines. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Israeli forces opened the gates of its rainwater stores east of Gaza, allowing rainwater to flood large swaths of Palestinian land. The Palestinian Ministry of Agriculture said in a statement that the water drowned thousands of meters of agricultural lands and damaged wheat and other winter crops. This led to great financial losses for farmers.
Every year in this time, Israeli army opens the rainwater gates to flood our lands and destroy the crops. Israel also sprays harmful herbicides at our land, damaging all the farms and crops planted. These attempts aim at forcing us to leave this land. We stress that these attempts won't make us leave. We will remain here.
In violation of international standards, Israeli army also shoot at Palestinian farmers to push them off their lands and spray herbicides beside the buffer zone along the Gaza Strip, something directly affects the livelihood of Palestinians.
This
is the second time in a month the Israeli army has opened its water gates and flooded our agricultural lands. All the winter crops are now destroyed here. This means a great financial loss for the farmers and even consumers. Our life as a farmer is under risk of being shot by Israeli army.
The Ministry of Agriculture says the move hampers transference of Gaza's main source of fruits and vegetables.
Over thousands of meters of our lands have been destroyed this time. Opening grain water gates is a move by Israeli army to force us to leave our lands and damage the main food supply for Gaza. Drowning these crops will not only damage the planted crops, but also the lands.
Palestinians here say the living conditions have been deteriorating due to the Israeli blockade. They say Israel is now making the bad situation worse by damaging their agricultural lands and causing them financial losses. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
In the Rohingya refugee camp in the outskirts of New Delhi, there is an utter panic and the residents are fearful even going out to buy the essentials. They say many are chased, intimidated, and usually police and other agencies visit their camps to monitor their movements. Ali Johar, a young Rohingya refugee, says several have been arrested in the recent months and put into jails for illegally entering India, saying the whole community is in utter despair.
Around 60 people have been arrested in the different parts of India, including West Bengal, Manipur, Assam, Haryana, and Delhi. In Delhi, around 8 people were detained. In Haryana, several families were harassed to leave out from Haryana.
Fearful of possible arrest and expulsion, scores of refugees have gone into hiding across the Indian subcontinent, while others have entered Bangladesh amid a mounting hate campaign against the community in India. The destitute community, who has escaped what the United Nations described genocide, is struggling for existence amid international silence about their plight. An estimated 40,000 are living in India. The community has faced a brutal crackdown by the army in their country, such as rape, murder, child killings, arbitrary arrests, forced disappearances, as well as destruction of the entire Rohingya villages. Now many fear that the military coup might make the situation even worse. Some reports suggest hundreds of Rohingya are being held in Indian jails on charges of illegal entry and have no proper judicial support. Their men are unable to find work due to lack of identity cards and threats of intimidation by law enforcement agencies, forcing men to stay at their camps.
We have been living here peacefully since 2012. We came to save our lives, but the police and other agencies are usually coming to our camps for questioning, asking our IDs, and this has become a routine. We are terrified and we can't even sleep, thinking what would happen to us.
Anti-Rohingya sentiments have risen since the emergence of Hindu nationalist government of BJP in 2014. Since then, many anti-Rohingya campaigns and Hindu groups have been demanding their expulsion, while the government describes them as a security threat. Observers say the Rohingya refugees in particular have in the past and present been used largely for political reasons in this part of the world. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Yemenis have come together before the UN office in Sana'a to call on the international community to step in and pressure the Saudi-led coalition into releasing detained oil vessels. The detention of oil vessels has left the country in desperate struggle to survive amid a harsh shortage of fuel.
We have lots of problems amid fuel shortage. We stay here for days to get some liters of gasoline due to the blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition and the continued detention of oil ships. We call on those who are after making concessions against the enemies to stand firm when it comes to the basic needs of Yemeni people.
Major sectors including health have warned that they may collapse in a few days if the detained oil vessels by the Saudi-led coalition are not immediately released. Thousands of facilities have already stopped providing services due to a lack of fuel.
The situation today is entirely catastrophic, especially in the health sector. The petroleum company is unable to provide health facilities with the oil derivatives. 50 days have passed and not even a lease has been allowed to enter the port of Hodeidah. The US and the UN bear responsibility of what is happening in Yemen.
The Saudi-led coalition is still holding 14 Yemeni oil ships illegally as they were inspected and authorized by the United Nations through verification and inspection mechanism. Hundreds of cars take days in long lines in front of the only working gas station in Sana'a. Yemenis say overcoming this dire situation needs a real action by the international community to step in and to pressure the Saudi-led coalition to release the detained oil vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
The prosecutor's office against hate crimes in Barcelona says it sees sufficient evidence to investigate Spain's far right for allegedly inciting hatred against Muslims following a complaint by several Muslim communities in Catalonia. At the core of the controversy is a video published online by the nativist ultra-nationalist party Vox during the recent election campaign in Catalonia.
The video falsely claims the entire Muslim community in Catalonia is responsible for the 2017 terrorist attacks in Barcelona. It purportedly shows footage of women in burqas in mosques that was actually shot in Afghanistan and other countries.
Vox's Twitter account was temporarily suspended at the end of January for breaching the company's hate speech regulations with false accusations and unfounded claims against Muslims in Catalonia.
Their strategy is to polarize society, to create fear and manipulate that fear in order to antagonize communities. This is an old mechanism that underlines all forms of racism. It alienates others by labeling them as foreigners. It goes back centuries in the Iberian Peninsula, and that is where you need to start in order to understand the rise of Islamophobia in Spain.
Vox won 11 seats in Catalonia's regional parliament. Their aggressive campaign against Muslims has raised awareness among community leaders to re-examine their alliances.
We regret the silence of political parties in Catalonia in this election. While they all wooed Muslim voters, not a single one had the courage to stand up and denounce the Islamophobic, xenophobic attacks against our country.
Although Catalonia is home to nearly 500,000 Muslims and has elected its first Muslim female member of parliament in 2017, it does not have a central cultural center or great mosque to this day. Unlike in previous suits against the far right, representatives of the Muslim community in Catalonia say they believe they have a solid case against Vox. They trust the courts will do them justice this time around. Kusai Kadri, Barcelona.
The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, has just launched a new strategy designed to make the 27-nation bloc more assertive when it comes to trade policy. Apparently, the aggressive Trump era highlighted weaknesses in this area. During an online press conference, we asked the commissioner in charge if EU firms will be able to trade with Iran, despite threats of penalties from the US for doing so.
Against the illegal application of third country illegal extraterritorial application of a third country sanctions. For this, we have a blocking statute, which we are looking how to update it.
On Thursday, Charles Michel, who has a mandate to speak on behalf of the EU's 27 government leaders, held a phone conversation with the president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani. A statement issued on behalf of the European Council president says he told Rouhani the EU will continue to deploy efforts to facilitate the full implementation of the Iran nuclear agreement and America's return to the deal. Joe Biden has expressed his willingness to rejoin the 2015 international agreement, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. The point has been made by numerous commentators. This is not about Biden giving indications or keeping promises. It's about the United States respecting international law. After all, the JCPOA is underpinned by a United Nations resolution. So far, however, Biden's administration has failed to take definitive action. The European Investment Bank has told us it will work with Iran once the conditions are right.
It means that, for example, the sanction policy has to be then different, and all the international agreements, you know, that we have to also adhere to, all that has to be sorted out before we can go and be active.
If Washington's illegal sanctions are lifted, Iran will be able to interact more freely with the EU across all industries, including energy.
The more supply there is, the weaker the prices in principle. So Iran being on the market both for oil and gas is good news for the consumers.
The EU is not shy about releasing statements, but it's unclear what concrete steps the bloc, as coordinator of the JCPOA, is taking to pull the US back into line. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
This winter has seen food bank queues snaking around corners in the UK. Those down on their luck waiting up to 5 hours in the freezing cold, not knowing if there will be anything left for them. In places where poverty and hunger were already rife, it's the tip of the iceberg. Jaywick, a seaside village in southeast England, named the country's most deprived area for the past decade. Over the years, local authorities have been grilled over worsening conditions here to no avail. The council declined our request for an interview, but on Facebook, residents themselves were forthcoming. Maria responded to my post, saying her family and neighbours needed food. People here resent their Jaywick's shanty town status and are wary of outsiders. Reporters have tried to get interviews by offering them alcohol in the past. Drug and alcohol abuse are already a problem here. The government has given the local council millions of pounds to build a marketplace and affordable housing, but the locals say they're yet to feel the benefit of that.
They sort the landlords out and they do better housing for people in Jaywick. I know they've built some new houses, but the trouble is the residents of Jaywick are not being offered the new housing.
They're not.
So it is, they're not clearing the crisis really, because there's a lot of people struggling in places with no heating and poor decorating.
These cottages used to be temporary holiday accommodation, but have served as permanent homes for decades now. They are run down and have little or no heating. There is no pressure on property owners to fix them either. Brenda has lived here for 31 years, and with her husband suffering from Alzheimer's, the food bank closing has only added to her woes. Supermarkets say they can't deliver to Jaywick. People are relying on community spirit to get them through. Half the children here live in poverty. Unemployment is high. For every five people, there's only one job. The British government stands accused of leaving it to charities to feed the country's hungry, millions of them children. NGOs say this is a comedown for the fifth largest economy in the world, and food bank queues growing because of the pandemic has only highlighted an already existing crisis. Bianca Rahimi, London.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en. the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. What a heavy rain! And the window is open. It's about to dampen all over the house. I have to close the window. Oh, look at there. What a beautiful rainbow. 7 beautiful colors next to each other. Oh, wow, what an exciting coincidence. You know why? Because today I'm going to take you to an extraordinary place which might look like a rainbow, to the 7-colored spring of Mojen. The 7-colored spring of Mojen is one of the unique springs of Iran. This spring is located 25 kilometers north of Shahrud in Semnan province. The 7-colored spring of Mojen is a type of sulfur spring. The colorfulness of this spring is because of the presence of different types of minerals around this spring. The sulfurous water of this spring is used for treating skin and skeletal diseases. The diversity of flora and fauna of this region is also of great importance. The city of Shahrud is a paradise for nature lovers. This city is covered with all manifestations of beauty, including desert, mountains, waterfall, river, and green forest, which are seen everywhere. I am now on the foothill of Shahwar Mountain. In the cavities of the valleys of this mountain flows the Mojen Spring. To reach this colorful spring, I have to walk a little. Oh, what a gorgeous scenery! On my sides, there are beautiful trees and bushes. What a bizarre odor. This is sulfur. It shows that I'm getting close to the Mojen Spring. Oh my God, what an astonishing combination of beauty. Here, there are just color and color and color. And what beautiful colors! This part of the spring is red in color. Oh, the water of the spring is hot. The other side of the spring is turquoise in color, and a little farther, it's greenish. It's more like a dream. I can't believe such a pretty and colorful spring exists on Earth. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. You're listening to. I'm Ata, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi. We want to talk about Iran's developments since 1979 in different fields and on different aspects. Brother Ali Alavian, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. And Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
So, since the occurrence of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, 1979, about 42 years have passed, and in these, we can say 42 years, different achievements and developments were made by the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's right. For today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the developments which took place after the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Islamic Republic of Iran, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, is famous for establishing justice, and also we talked about it, also the scientific developments, we also talked about it. But one of the mottos of the Islamic Republic of Iran at the very beginning was establish spirituality among the people and boosting this kind of Muslim and Islamic spirit among the people. First of all, talk a little bit about this. Did really Islamic Revolution of Iran and the establishment of Islamic Republic of Iran had a role in changing the, we can say, beliefs of the people in terms of being a Muslim? I mean, Islam has existed 1,400 years before that too. But can we say that Islamic Revolution of Iran had a role in changing your life as a Muslim and being like a Muslim?
Yes, obviously. When we're talking about the spirituality in the Islamic Revolution, we can go back to the statement of Imam Khomeini, the slogan that he has said, or the things that he admitted. And when he had the revolution and this country, he said, we have all this, or I have gained or got this revolution because of Imam Hussein in Karbala, which shows that he has linked this country, this revolution, to the revolution of Imam Hussein. And we know that Imam Hussein was the grandson of the Prophet, and he was the person who have saved Islam. So spiritually talking, in Islam, we have some spiritual ideals. Amongst them, one is Imam Hussein. And he has related this revolution to the revolution of Imam Hussein that happened in the Karbala. And that's how we see, even at the eight-year wars, we see there were the youth who went there. And the way they were basically the way they were, they had that courage, or we can say like the bravery that they had.
That's right.
That was because of the spiritual power that they had. You cannot force anyone to go to the battlefield, especially at that age. Mm-hmm. Parents cannot force them. You generally, we have seen like if you force someone, they can run away. But we have seen them how they were going in front of like the enemies. That's to right. save their countries. There was a spiritual background. There was a spiritual motive behind it. And that spiritual motive have forced them to go there. And that's why Imam Khomeini was saying, like, these are the real mystics mm-hmm. who have got the ma'rifah or the knowledge of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who right. knows Allah better than us. So they have reached to that level. And on top of that, obviously, we can see how the things have been expanded in the Islamic Republic. For example, there is a box of sadaqat from yes. the
relief committee, Imam Khomeini relief committee. That's right.
Relief committee. That's what Imam Khomeini started.
Yes.
And this is the best idea, you know, mm. in order to help poor
yeah.
spiritually. The leader, what he has done, he has fixed each box in the beginning of each street.
Yeah.
And then the houses also have that boxes.
Yes.
And then everyone, like, they're putting some
putting a charity them, over,
charity
there,
over
right.
there, and then yeah. they are collected. They collect it and give to poor.
Yes.
So we can see how this idea has helped this Islamic revolution to erase the poverty mm-hmm. from the country. This That's this right. is one of the reasons that mm-hmm. the poverty has been reduced in this country. On top of that, obviously, as you mentioned, like I think it was previous program, the system of like infrastructure.
Yes.
Jihad-e Sazandegi.
Sazandegi and
that was there.
That's right.
Where does this come from? This volunteering yourself. Mm-hmm. It is because of spirituality.
Yes.
It's not, no one is paying you.
Yes.
There should be a motive, and that motive is spirituality. That obviously they are helping the doctors who are going to the poor areas, the areas where no one goes, the teachers going to the areas. Especially, you know, there is a special, especially, you know, Iran has a big number of nomads.
Yes.
In it. And
the tribal nomads.
The tribal nomads. Yes. And then no one was going there to teach
yeah.
them. And then there are role models who went there being a teacher who taught, obviously, these people. And they raised this.
That's
All
right.
these things have happened because of the okay. sacrifice that they had, the volunteer. It wasn't for Iran.
That's right.
I have to say this. This mm-hmm. wasn't for Iran because yeah. Iran was at the time of Shah as well.
Yes.
This country was there.
Yes.
It is because of some other motive.
You know, nowadays we are passing live in the pandemic and COVID-19.
COVID-19, yes.
Yeah, and you know that most of the volunteers, especially in the city of Qom, who are sent, you know, to different places in order to help the people are from among these, we can clergies. Say the Rouhanis and the clergies. These are the clergies who go to the hospitals and the clinics in order to help the people and the poor people on the beds to do their rituals.
Very true.
Yeah, you know, this is in fact how spirituality is helping you. Or, for example, if you take a look into the graveyards and the mortuaries, you know, that the dead bodies have to be washed and bathed in an Islamic way. These are the Rouhanis who are on the scene and doing that. Although it's very dangerous, you know, that COVID-19, you know, is over there and the pandemic is over there. So special clothes, which are very heavy, which are hot to wear, has to be put down. But all this sense of spirituality is helping them. Also sending the preachers, you know, we have these
Sazmane
Tablighat-e Islami or Islamic, we can say, dissemination organization in Iran of sending different Rouhanis or the clergymen to different regions of Iran. They go over there, they help the people with their religious obligations, maybe we can say collecting homes from them or helping them with their rituals or for example, helping them even with their infrastructures, okay? We know that some of the places in Iran are still, we can say, do not have, for example, proper roads to go. But these Rouhanis and the clergymen, you know,
they're going and helping.
Yeah,
we
and the only reason is this sense of spirituality and the spiritual motives that is helping.
We should
them.
Not also forget about the media as well.
Mm-hmm.
How the TV and radio, for example,
yeah.
the Shahid Avini,
yes.
how he was involved, and
yeah.
he was showing the spiritual motive of the people, like
the
his
people.
Videos.
Yes.
That was on the martyrs and the front line, obviously, 80 years war.
The battlefields, that's right.
But the point was there that he was showing the motive of these people.
Yeah.
That why they're at the front battlefield, it's because of the spirituality.
If you compare Avni's documentaries with the other war documentaries, the bravery is really different. I mean, the tone of Avni has given a spiritual sense of the world. I mean, what he's talking about is not mere Saving Private Ryan thing, Steven Spielberg movie. No, it's not. Avni ones is a kind of a spiritual narration out of the battlefields over there.
Yes.
And the sense of spirituality that exists in the battlefield among young people. Okay.
On top of that, obviously, there are the different movies. For example, the series, there was Mukhtarnama, I think.
Yeah.
The Holy Mary and
Imam Ali.
Yeah. Imam Hassan. There were different.
Prophet Joseph.
Hassan, yeah. Prophet Joseph. And all those things, obviously, these have obviously impacts on the people because people like to watch this.
Yes.
And we have seen, like, every year they start playing the same.
No, we have Imam Reza,
serials.
That was Velayat-e-Ishq, that's right, Imam Hassan,
and
Sadar, the loneliest commander.
On top of that, there are different, like, TV shows. For example, there's the Samta Khoda and Asal in the month of Ramadan.
Yes, yes.
They talk about these things. So there are different programs
there,
on the TVs as well.
Yeah.
These programs shows, and the viewership of this program shows, that the people have spirituality in them.
Mm-hmm.
They are inclined towards the spirituality, which wasn't before at the time. And we cannot see this. We do not see this in other countries as
Call
well.
Call of Islam Radio is, believe me, because in 15 years, this is one of the developments and the achievements of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. We, as the Iranian people, have been working in Call of Islam Radio more than 15 years now, producing Islamic program. It's not Call of Islam Radio. We have Call of Islam page in our IRIB English Radio World Service. Okay, it is IRIB English Radio, one of the achievements. So we have our own programs in Islamic.
A couple of more things to mention.
Yes.
For example, you know, every year there's a Rahyan-e-Noor.
Yes.
The youth, especially the youth, the young generation, they go for the
visitation
of the battlefield, which was like happened between Iraq and Iran.
Yeah.
And that is full of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Like there, they really experience many things.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen many people changing.
Yes.
And sometimes people do not know what happened there. When they go there, they visit the place, they are really knowing about that. And on top of
this organized sending of the caravans to Karbala, Najaf, you know.
On top of that, we can see the
things.
Number of people participating in the Arba'in walk of Imam Hussein in Iraq.
Yes.
Even, like, obviously, if there is no visas, if there is no limitations, I think the whole Iran will go there.
We'll go, yes.
And the Iraqis has to move forward to the next country.
Yeah, that's it.
So
that's for sure.
It looks like it. Like, everywhere you see Iranians on the Arba'in.
Okay.
And it shows, obviously, these are the attachments that we have, spiritual attachments.
Mm-hmm.
And these are those points on which, obviously, there is no... we cannot deal these things with other things.
That's
there
right.
is no, there is nothing to give up in this in this field, obviously, this spirituality. And this is what the West and the other systems are lacking.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have this spirituality. They're finding their spirituality in the yoga, for example, in the other, we can say, like...
No, religious sites in Iran are welcomed by many Iranian tourists, also the foreign tourists. So the establishments have
the
to
shrines.
Grow in Mashhad, in we can say in Qom, in the city of Qom, and also you know, for example, in the city of Qom, we have so many of these of imamzadas. Okay, beside their religious, we can say importance, they attract many tourists because they go over there for the Islamic architecture over there, or for example, in Isfahan and Shiraz, they go over there to see the masterpieces of Sheikh Baha'i, one of the outstanding Shia scholars who is buried in close, you know, to Imam Reza alayhi salam in Mashhad. You know, these are all the great things that after the Islamic Revolution of Iran have been given importance to.
And one more thing I want to just mention for our Muslim brothers who think that the Shias do not read Quran or they do not have Huffaz, like those who memorize Quran. There are many people who think generally it is said to them that the Shias, they don't follow Quran.
Yeah.
They must see the programs on the TV, the Iranian TV.
Yes.
It has more than like 400 programs that are showing like the Quranic competitions, their websites,
recitations,
over the statement
Soft
of
verse.
The Rahbar, the statement of the Supreme Leader of Iran, that the Iranian youth should become Hafiz and how much he emphasizes on the Quran.
We have the biggest brother software organization.
I don't remember the number, what he said,
20,000 memorizers.
Yes. In a year. No. He said we need to achieve, we need to have at least 200,000.
200, something like that.
He said we need to have 200,000 Hufaz in the country. Mm-hmm. And since his statement, obviously, there are, I think, more than 20,000 right now. And every year, obviously, they're raising. And the competitions that happens like in Iran, like that occurs in Iran.
Reciters, we have the best reciters. We can say who won all the competitions. Karim Mansouri is one of them. You know, he is really great. Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai, the Quran genius, who was only 7 years old. You know, he was a Hafiz, he was an interpreter. Mm-hmm. You know, his videos are on YouTube. You know, I really invite them going over there to Saudi Arabia. All the Hafiz are over there asking him different questions and answering him with the ayahs of the Quran. The biggest Quranic software and Islamic organization, which is named as Noor, established in the city of Qom. And different, you know, organizations that are over here, all of them, in order to promote spirituality among the people. And the good news is that they are not limited to the Farsi language. Now, on different languages, they are available, we can say, on their websites. Thank you very much, Brother Ali Alavian and Said Mohsen Naghvi, for your presence in the program Viewpoints, which was regarding the spiritual developments made after the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And dear listeners, visit our website, parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
كان وقام الإمام قام الإمام
قام الإمام
وقامت مرايا وكر الأنام كر الأنام
قام الإمام
جماهير إيران في صحوة تداعت إلى الساح وسط الزحام
وقامت أسودا تلبي الخميني نداء السماء وغيث الغمام
وعاد الإمام إلى أرضه ليملأ عدلا بلاد الكرام.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.